Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the November 22nd, 2015 session, focusing on 2 Samuel 23, the first 7 verses, David's last words. I'm David Cassidy, and I work with the team here at Faith Lab. And for this episode, I'm joined by our good friends Nikki Hardiman and Burt Montgomery. How are you guys doing this evening?
Doing good, David. How are you?
Doing well.
Pretty good.
I'm also excited to again welcome Aaron Hall back to the podcast. Aaron has been with us before several times, was on the last podcast, and we're so glad she's again joined us. She's a writer, a doctoral student at Columbia Seminary, and mother to Logan, which is probably the most important, right?
Yes, definitely. Good to be here.
And you can follow Aaron at her blog at aaronrobinsonhall.com. We'll link that up in the show notes as well. But Aaron, we're so glad you're back with us.
Thanks.
All right, Bert, Daniel is away this evening, so would you mind getting us started on the text?
Sure. As you said, our text is from 2 Samuel. Last week, our text was from the very opening chapter of 1 Samuel, the story of Hannah. This week, our text is from the second to last chapter of 2 Samuel, with King David's final words. And a lot has happened in there. When we started last week, the tribes of Israel were still in the period of being governed by judges, of whom Hannah's son, Samuel, was the last. Between that and where we pick up today, a kingdom has arisen, despite Samuel's warnings, and the first king, Saul, has come and gone, not without controversies and scandals and tragedies. Saul's story is intricately intertwined with that of a young David, who eventually becomes the second, and second to last, king of the United Kingdom of Israel. And of course, we know about the mixture of hubris and humility within David, which led to great successes and great tragedies, both politically and personally. So the opening verses of 2 Samuel 23 present us these last words of David, as he is presumably looking back on it all before his death. It's a personal testimony of praise, not unlike so many of the Psalms which were attributed to David, of how, through it all, God was with him. It includes the inevitable contrast between the wicked and the good, also common in many of the Psalms, like this one in verse 6 when David says, "But the wicked shall all be raked aside like thorns." You know, I wonder if he's gloating about it or just stating fact. But just prior to that, he paints this picture that God has said of him, David, "He who rules justly, he who rules in awe of God is like a morning at sunrise, a morning without clouds." And this is how David says his life and his rule has been. God has blessed David and caused all of his success and brought his every desire to fruition. Now, I cannot help but think about this in political terms, because it was very political. And I think about it of how presidents at the end of their terms and as they approach the end of their lives will tell their story and try to wrap it up from their beginnings through their ascension to the highest office in our land and all of their decisions and their mistakes and their successes and paint it all in a positive light. And almost always they're going to give God the credit. And of course, we're left to bicker about it all, as I'm sure we'll do about David in just a minute. But that's what I think is what makes the Bible so important. David's story, as we have said in previous podcast episodes, all the biblical stories as well, are our stories, still today. God still moves among us. Whether or not God deserves credit for everything we've done is a different matter. But don't we want to paint the best picture of ourselves as we can and note God's blessings on us all the way? And of course, for better and for worse, God is with us all the way.
You know, you were talking about the political candidates, and I can't help but think of, you know, you have the debates and all the precious little people are up there, and they get so irritated when you bring up, like, the facts. Like, they're telling a story, but if you bring up, well, actually, you did this, this, and this, and that's kind of how I feel like David, like, the story does not need the facts. It just needs, like, the big picture. Like, God was in it, and aren't we so glad of that?
Oh, I have such a love-hate relationship with the David story. sometimes I really, really love it, and then sometimes it just makes me so mad.
Well, that's because you're troubled with the facts. Like, don't look at
Fair enough.
Don't listen to the media.
I get bogged down in the details. The truth is, David's story, when we really read it and we understand what's going on, he was a terrible person in a lot of ways. And I might, you know, get in trouble for saying that, but his story... Okay, so he was at least an adulterer. And when we understand the Bathsheba story, we understand she really had no power in that situation at all. Hence my strong language talking about David. But his son followed in his footsteps and raped Tamar, his daughter, and he did nothing to respond to it. His household, if we're going to talk about his household, does not, when we learn... listen to the stories of the infighting with his sons and the murder and trying to take over the monarchy. It doesn't match up with the big picture story. So how do we settle the facts from the big picture story that David's trying to paint?
So what matters more to us? Like when we're reading this, when we're using this to grow our faith, all that good stuff. Like, which one matters more? All the small parts of his story, or maybe this like big, this sweet little memoir here at the end?
I think you asked an impossible question.
Well, I try.
God must have seen something in David.
I mean, definitely, definitely.
David was, there's the whole story of how David is selected, right?
Right.
And then, you know, the battle with Goliath and the... How do we get our heads around somebody who can do really great things and yet also do incredibly terrible things? And yet, you know, God has this capacity to both choose and love.
And redeem and complete the story and all that stuff.
In the middle of it, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week with Hannah. The recurring theme within the both books of Samuel... and I think goes on into Kings, and it's a recurring theme throughout Scripture, but that the low shall be raised up and the mighty shall fall, that the humble will be lifted and the proud made humble. You know, at one point, David was the lowly one. David was the outsider, the one nobody would pick, the mutt, if you would, and he was lifted up. But then he's proud and he's, you know, is filled with hubris and everything crumbles. So, I mean, he's just a continuation of that cycle that's just been going on.
Well, and it's a story that I think we watch play out in the media today over and over and over again. People become famous too quick, and we watch their world spin out of control, or politicians or athletes gain too much power, and then they can't cope with it. And so their responses are considerably less than healthy. And we watch them spin out of control on TV. And I like your connection, Bert, of how presidents, the end of their terms, no matter how it went, by anyone's standards, they all get to retell their story. They get to paint it in a way that they want to paint it for us. And that's what we have with David here.
And don't we all, you know, when someone passes away, don't we provide last words that are their positive side?
Yeah.
It's rare that you have a funeral that's a negative about the person. And, you know, my husband has done a lot of funerals and things. And one of his favorites is this lady that, like, nobody could figure out something nice to say to her. And he was fresh out of seminary and just kind of handed this funeral. Like, the senior pastor was like, I'm not touching that. So he handed it to Jake. And this dear, sweet lady, like, you meet with the family and they don't have a whole lot to say. But they said, you know, she had a lot of books. And so Jake phrased this, you know, she's long since gone, as... so-and-so, she was a lover of words. Well, and he made it into something beautiful. But afterwards, I was like, what were you talking about? There's nothing else to say. So you do kind of shape the story in the end to remember maybe the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we start wrapping all this up in a beautiful bow, I just have to say, okay, it's one thing for there to be somebody that there's just not a lot nice to say. It's mm-hmm. another thing when there has been a trail of victims left in the wake of somebody's life. And so when we wrap David's story up in this beautiful bow, we neglect Bathsheba's story and Tamar's story and his children's story, and their stories get forgotten. And that is why this is always so hard for me, because I love the redemption. I love that God can use all kinds of people to do God's work in the world. But there is just a wake of destruction and pain and victims left in David's wake.
So the truth is, his story doesn't stand alone. Like, we need to hear the other stories,
That's
too.
Right. Right. And their stories are often so silenced, because the people who get to rewrite their stories have the power.
Mm, yeah.
I wonder what they would say.
What Tamar would say, or what Bathsheba would say? What would their last words be about David?
Like, what would the last words be if they were tasked with it? Like, that would they still... I mean, I don't know that they... Of course, I'm putting myself in their shoes, but we don't know what they would say.
No, we don't.
Maybe. But I mean, communities do this too, right? I mean, this isn't just shaped by David. Somebody, the community chose to keep telling this and kept sharing it, and it ends up getting written down and it's canonized, and here we have it.
Right. I mean, we've remarked before when we've done David's story, we get one version of this story in Samuel and Kings, and then we get the Chronicles, and they retell these stories, but they leave out all the bad parts. And there's hundreds of years between the writing of those books. So when David's story is retold, it's reshaped to be prettier.
Thank goodness none of our churches would do that today with their history.
Oh, he went there.
Okay, so if you've ever read the church directories, like where they have the one-page history in the page, they are precious. Yes. I mean, you get like 10 years of a squabble over the carpet, you know, in a sweet little, and they wondered, or, you know, they talked nicely.
Yeah.
The histories are just really cute.
Yeah, and there's some pretty vicious things that have occurred in those histories that are not told.
Yeah. And some of those histories are being made right now. I mean, churches are going through terrible ordeals now, and 25, 50 years down the road, the people who have been hurt aren't going to be remembered.
You know, I have a love thing for Brené Brown.
I love Brené Brown.
She just offers so many good things.
Who is that?
Brené Brown is a person you should stop right now and go read her books.
All right. Stop the podcast now. Go. You have to just go Google her on YouTube and watch all her YouTube stuff. Every one of them.
Okay, so she has a lot of YouTubes and all that kind of stuff, but she writes about, her big focus is shame and vulnerability and all that good stuff. So
it's fun.
Yeah. But she's also really funny. I mean, I have a love thing. So her quote, and I wrote this down, thinking about the David story, the opposite of shame is not discipline. The opposite of shame is empathy. And what you do when your story is marred by, you know, all these terrible things that happen, how do you recover? The opposite of shame is not to structure and come up with new practices and all that. It's to gain empathy, to grow in kindness and even the grace that you offer your victimizer, but to even gain grace there.
There are countless churches who have celebrated David's in the form of great, great successful pastors who have left behind in their wake abuse, molestation, victims left and right. And churches, you know, either didn't want to believe it, or just hit it because the other things that were happening, this is a great man of God with his faults like David, and kept going. And occasionally some of the victims, you know, 30, 40 years later, will speak up and say, that pastor that y'all love so much did this to me and did this to others. And that is just an unimaginable thing for people to have to deal with. I mean, the pressure of children or young adults being manipulated and abused sexually by a person because of their trust, but his position of authority as God's person in that church. And the success that church is having and the respect that people put on him that allow him to say, to overlook these things that are going on, leaving behind and the children, the victims that get left out. I mean, they get pulled out of the church. They hate the church. They hate God. They hate, you know, all this kind of stuff. And of course, the Catholic Church has dealt with this with alleged, well, abuse of the priests. But again, it's rampant within Protestant churches as well, too. And I think about that when you're demanding, what about the victims? What about the victims? What about their stories? Because the churches are going to look back and they're going to talk about the great things that God did under that pastor's leadership. And somebody, somewhere, somebody's saying, well, let me tell you about some of the great things that pastor did. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it's like you said, somewhere Bathsheba's saying, let me tell you something about King David. You know, Tamar saying, let me tell you something about my dad, you know.
So do they get to tell it then? Like, is, where does storytelling and telling the story of the church, where do we have truth telling?
Yes. I don't know. It has to occur.
It has to.
And it's part of that. It's part of that leveling out, raising up the ones who have been made low, and bringing down the ones that have been placed high on the pedestals, which is extremely painful, and it's nothing that any of us want to deal with.
And at the same time, if we are truth telling, the other truth that we claim is grace, redemption. You know, like there has to be that stuff woven in, even if we are saying this is a horrible human being. I'm not saying throw grace at them. I'm saying we have to articulate how that works with the horrible situations.
I mean, well, I think...
Go ahead, Nikki.
Well, when we look at verse 5, David is speaking and he says, is not my house like this with God? Mm-hmm. And then he kind of answers that, for he has made with me an everlasting covenant, ordered in all things and secure. And so... when you study Hebrew scripture, oftentimes this conversation comes up. David is remembered as a man after God's own heart, and he's the only king who really has that distinction. And the prophets and the Hebrew scriptures judge kings who do not maintain worship, honor of God. And for all of David's faults, he does do that. He never worships other gods. He never allows that to come in. And so that's the judgment that these texts place on leadership. It has to do with connection to God. Fidelity to God. Mm-hmm. And so fidelity in other areas was not something that these scriptures seem to be incredibly concerned about. And so, but it certainly is something that we are concerned about today. And I think that in those verses, is not my house like this with God? Well, yeah, I think that when God is apart, your house is like these things.
Yeah.
And the only reason that your house continues is because of God's covenant. It had nothing to do with David and David's goodness or what David brought to that situation, but it had everything to do with God's fidelity to God's covenant.
But yeah, when we're looking for leaders and we're looking for people in power that we want to guide us, we will intentionally overlook a lot of terrible things, won't we? I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah, if we're voting for them.
So why is this, what do we do with this passage? Why is it here? I mean, we're deeply troubled by it, right?
It's here because it's the human story that continues to go on. And we'll always have people like King David. I know that's blasphemous, and somebody's going, well, there's not everybody with, you know, God's own heart. But we'll have people in power who do great things, and people in power who do awful things, and sometimes it's the same person. Whether it's a pastor of a church, or whether it's president of the United States, or whether it's a father of a household or a mother of a household, a principal of a school, and they'll always, more often than not, think, hey, I've got God on my side.
Well, and, I mean, do we each do that at some level?
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah, when we retell what happened, you know, that's part of the shaping the story. I want to come out pretty good in the end.
Yeah.
I don't want to say how I tripped on the way to whatever. I'm going to say I got there.
And that's the troubling part about grace, isn't it? That grace, God and God's mercy and grace, even when we're at our worst, and others can judge us and always point to, well, they're not that good. Let me tell you what they, that God's grace is always going to win out over us, over our bad stuff. And that's very troubling because we want to be, especially if we're an advocate for the victims, we want to make sure that person, you know, we bring up the, and that's right. I'm not, please.
Right,
you
wanna, right.
I mean, I'm an advocate for victims. Well, I want to be. And you know, you do that, but we have to, you know, it's like I'm just, and I've mentioned this before, I'm overwhelmed by the grace of Sister Helen Prejean, who ministers on death row in Louisiana, and the people she deals with. And you got to say, what about the victims? I mean, some of these people have done just unspeakable things. And she is able to find somewhere in the dirtiest, darkest corners of humanity a glimpse of goodness. And that makes that person worthy, even though they should be locked up, even though they should be whatever. And she's not denying that, but she'll find a kernel of goodness in spite of everything, even with all the victims' advocates out there that need to be there bringing their stories out.
Well, and maybe not even it's the kernel of goodness, but it is that that all of us are made in the image of God. Every last one of us. And even those who work for the cause of those who are victimized, if we cannot at least acknowledge that those who perpetrate crime, as heinous as the ones we're discussing, if we can't acknowledge that even they contain the mark of God in their lives, then what we're working for doesn't really matter.
Amen.
You know, this reminds me of a story in the movie Ironweed with Jack Nicholson and Meryl Streep, and they're drunk, and they're walking along, and they come across an old Eskimo woman who is drunk and lying passed out in the snow, and Nicholson asks, is she drunk or is she just a bum? And Meryl Streep says, well, she's just a bum. She's been a bum all of her life. Well, she had to be something before she was just a bum. What was she before that? Well, she was a prostitute. She was a hooker in Alaska.
Mm.
Well, she hadn't been a hooker all of her life. So what was she before that? Well, I don't know. I guess she was just a little kid. And Nicholson says, well, a little kid is something, and it's not a bum, and it's not a hooker. It's something. So let's take her in. And Philip Yancey writes about this scene, and he says, these two vagrants who were drunk themselves, they see this Eskimo woman through the eyes of grace. What society sees only as a bum and a prostitute, grace sees a little kid, a person made in the image of God, no matter how defaced that image had become through time. And that's always stuck with me. And I think about that when I think of David. Even when I get mad at David, like you, Nikki, and you just think, what a terrible person and horrible things he's done. But yet, at some point, you can keep going back and go, before that, before that, before that, before that, before that, before that, what was he? Well, he's just a little kid created in the image of God.
And in the end, that is comforting to all of us, right?
Yes.
Because if God can see us in spite of our flaws, and we all have them, obviously some are far worse than others, but still, it's hard, I think, for us to conceive of God's ability to love us, you know, regardless. And there was no doubt God loved David.
Yeah.
I guess because in the end, we're all just little kids made in the image of God.
I was just thinking about my sister and mom took a road trip last year. And about halfway through, my sister calls and says, I cannot listen to one more story. They drove from North Carolina to Florida, and that's a long time of togetherness. And she said about 2 hours in, we stopped singing all the 70s tunes, and mom starts telling all the family stories. And all these people that we have upheld as, like, you know, Uncle Al, Aunt So-and-so, mom was just dishing all the dirt on them. And when they got to Florida, they got to hang out with some family that we really had disconnected with because of some serious heartache and brokenness. But I was struck by, we didn't change their names. We didn't dismiss, like, they're still in the family. Even though these horrible things had happened, we still count as family. And David and Tamar are still in the story together. There's just no undoing that.
Well, thank you guys for this conversation. Sometimes, you know, the text causes us, if we're honest as we approach the text, it causes us to ask questions. And I think that's okay. I think God can handle it. I appreciate your honesty. And maybe we need to sit down with a pen and help, you know, tell this story with the whole family system involved. Sounds like that's part of what was going on tonight. Well, thank you all, and I look forward to our next conversation together.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, David.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Find more information about this podcast, as well as videos and teaching resources for this session, at faithelement.net. Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.